Hello, folks, and welcome to Songs of Our Own, a marital tour through the music that shaped us. I'm your co-host, Lee Strickland.
And I'm Al Leone.
Well, hey, Al.
Hey, Lee, how you doing?
I am doing so good. How are you?
Lee, I'm doing great. I'm still really jazzed that it's 2021. This is wonderful.
I know. I'm so glad that the year has changed and we got new calendars and hopefully there's a return to somewhat more normal times.
Yeah, we'll see.
I don't know that we'll ever get fully back to normal. Like the handshake may have died with this, which is fine with me.
You didn't like touching people anyway.
No, I think it's dumb that people are like, oh, you got to have a firm grip and go in for it. And, manly things.
Listen, as a lady, like I don't want to brag, like humble brag. I had a really good handshake and it definitely people noticed and they were like, whoa, that's a good handshake. And I got compliments on it, which felt really good. So I'm a little sad that the handshake might be gone.
You did have a good handshake. I was always more of the mind of like, listen, if you want me to like hurt you, like I can kick you in the shin.
Remember this.
Yeah. I didn't get the job, but I left a mark.
They'll always remember you until the bruise fades.
That's right. And then I'll just be that crazy guy.
You know, Lee, that's actually an oddly good transition to what we're talking about today.
Go on.
Well, we're talking about Adele's album, 21, not 25.
Yeah, sorry about that for those that listened to our This Land Is Your Land episode. I got my numbers all mixed up.
And I feel like when you think about love, right? Like, there's the good impression, positive love, and then there's the, like, I'm gonna kick you in the shins and leave kind of love. And I feel like Adele's albums have been more about the kick you in the shins kind of love.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe even, like, a little bit north of the shin, if we're being honest.
Yeah, there were some sad songs.
So, for February's album, a month about Valentine's Day here in the States and love, and also our shortest month and the month that brought you me.
our favorite month.
Yeah, some odd years ago. Yeah, we decided to go with 21 from Adele.
So, Lee, tell us, what do we need to know about this album?
So, 21 is the second studio album by English singer-songwriter Adele. It was released in January 24, 2011 in Europe and February 22nd, 2011, in North America by XL Recordings and Columbia Records. The album was named after the age of Adele during its production. 21 shares the folk and Motown, 21 shares the folk and Motown soul influences of her 2008 debut album, 19, but was further inspired by the American country and Southern blues music to which she had been exposed during her North American leg of her 2008-2009 An Evening with Adele tour. Composed in the aftermath of the singer's separation from her then-partner, the album typifies the near-forgotten tradition of confessional singer-songwriter, with its exploration into themes like heartbreak, introspection, and forgiveness. Adele began writing 21 in April 2009 while still involved in a relationship that inspired the record. In response to the media's typecasting her as a, quote, old soul, due to the vintage production and sentimental nature of her songs, Adele decided on a more upbeat and contemporary second album. However, studio sessions ended prematurely due to lack of productivity and inspiration. And I was reading that in those first sessions, they took them 2 weeks to record one song.
Oh, that seems like a really long time.
Yeah, it's a lot of wasted studio time. She resumed production immediately after the breakup of her relationship, which is evident in the rawness of her songs. Adele collaborated with various songwriters and producers, including Columbia Records co-president Rick Rubin, and then some other producers, Paul Epworth, Ryan Tedder, Jim Abbas, and Dan Wilson. This album was praised by critics for its understated production, vintage aesthetics, and Adele's vocal performance. 21 smashed the modest commercial expectations of her independent record label, again, XL Recordings. The album topped the charts in more than 30 countries and became the world's best-selling album for the years 2011 and 2012.
I just feel like that goes to show that heartbreak sells.
Exactly. In the United Kingdom, it is the best-selling album of the 21st century.
What?
And the fourth best-selling album of all time.
So she got beat out by the Beatles. Do you know who else she got beat out by?
Gosh, it's probably the Beatles. They may even have more than one of those in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they may have the top two albums or something. So it was the Beatles, I mean, probably the Rolling Stones, and then, like, probably Elvis. I don't know.
Elvis was big over there, too.
Elvis, maybe Wham. So, yeah, that's the info on the album. So it's cool that this tiny recording company got, like, these great honors and all this good stuff came out of them. Because usually you don't see that come out of these smaller independent record studios. It's usually like Columbia Records promotes this album. And I mean, Adele's been with this, that XL recording since she got out of school, basically.
Yeah, I feel like that's a really neat thing about Adele that almost makes her more relatable to everybody, is she's not trying to be this big record person. Like, she's just your homegrown hero that had a heartbreak and had something to say about it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, she's not, you know, she's not doing it just to sell albums. Like, she's very much writing for herself,
mm-hmm.
which is very evident and very cool to see. And she didn't fall into that trap that some artists fall into, where their first album is a smash and then their second one falls super flat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this one really exceeded her first album. And to me, that's always the mark of, like, a true artist.
Yeah, because anybody can have your first record be a hit because you have all of this time to work on it. But then when it comes time for your second album and there's all of this pressure, it's like, can you deal with the writer's block? Can you deal with the fans' expectations? Like, what is this going to turn into?
Yeah, exactly. So it's so much harder to put out a successful second album.
I wonder if that's why it took so long to try and record when she first started out doing it, because she was dealing with that. And then when she actually had, like, the motivation and was really connected and inspired, that's when she could produce something wonderful.
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, starting out, and I get an artist not wanting to fall into this trap of, like, oh, it's Adele, these are the kind of songs she makes.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that. And I think maybe trying to fight against what was going on in her heart really is what delayed and added to that, like, you know, quote unquote writer's block. Because if you're not feeling happy, I mean, how can you be expected to write these, like, happy songs?
Yeah, I mean, that's what Sarah Bareilles was singing about in Love Song, was like, I'm not going to write this just because you asked me to write it. Like, screw off.
In no uncertain terms.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like Adele would totally write something like that, too. She's just another powerhouse lady.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, I mean, what does 21 mean to you when you listen to it?
You know, I...
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. We all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this, like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now.
Shit.
I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
I think 21, it's funny because it did come out, I think Adele and I are pretty much the same age. She might be a little bit older than I am.
I mean, she's older than me.
But 21 came out in 2011.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe she's not older than me. Maybe she's barely older than me.
So, like, she's around our age. And yeah. When 21 came out, like, it was as I was turning 21. And, like, I was going through these kind of relationship things that she's singing about when, you know, you're talking about the, like, rumor has it and this person cheated and I'm cheating back, or the, like, don't worry, I'll find someone like you someday. Like, it was just so raw and true. And I was like, oh, Adele, like, you get it. You know, you're not trying to be poppy. You're not trying to be like, I'm going to stand up and take back the day and slay the day. Like, when you get your heart broken, nobody has time for that. You want, like, a pint of Ben and Jerry's in the notebook, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Adele just, like, had experienced the full range of heartbreak that I, from my perspective, was also experiencing. And it was just, I don't know if nice is the right word, but it was kind to be like, oh, I'm not alone in this, even though it feels really sucky and alone a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, I remember I was working at a rock wall, like, when this album came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, like, part of the benefit of getting to work there was you got to climb kind of after hours, after everything was shut down, which was really cool. And one of the other guys that worked there, like, super part-time with me, he came in and he was like, oh my gosh, have you heard this album? But I was like, no. And, like, at a rock wall, you know, you play pretty upbeat music that most folks know.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, at that time, you were playing a lot of dubstep.
Yeah, gross.
Which was really not my scene. So he goes and he puts this album on. And, like, I remember we're climbing and one of the other guys that worked there was there too. And he was just like, what is this? Like, this doesn't seem like the right music to climb to. And it is not the right music to climb to. But
absolutely not.
I remember being like, oh, it's Adele. Like, I need to go home and listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, put some attention or devote some attention seriously to just listening to this. And I did, and it was great. And, like, at that point, I had been single for a couple years and was, you know, it was still going to be a year or two before my next relationship, but it still felt really poignant and really meaningful. And I was like, man, where was this after my last breakup?
I just needed something to cry my eyes out to.
Right. Like, I had, like, Elton John's. I guess that's why they call it the blues.
That is such an old man sad song.
Oh, I know. I was listening to that and then, like, John Lee Hooker and Mississippi John Hurt and, like, just a lot of blues guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was like, where was this album in those times? And, like, thank God it's here now.
I mean, that totally explains why you love Adele, though, because she has this just incredible bluesy sound to her.
She does, this album especially. And it's really cool. When we start talking about some of the songs, I'll get into it. But yeah, to be inspired by, like, that kind of American blues music is just really neat.
I'm curious, Lee, you said that they took 2 weeks to record one song. Like, did that song end up on 21? And do you know which song it was?
I don't think it did. Everything I read, it didn't name the song, but it also didn't say that song had ended up anywhere on the album.
Gotcha.
So I think they maybe left it on the cutting room floor, or maybe it ended up because a couple other, like, songs were included on different regional releases.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the UK and the Japan release each had two bonus tracks on it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and all four of those were, I think there were four bonus tracks in total, and they were all covers of different songs.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if you follow Adele's albums, she typically includes one cover on each song or on each album.
Okay.
So, and we'll get to the one that was on this album because it's one of my favorites.
Well, Lee, it sounds like we should probably start talking about the songs, unless there's more we should talk about with the album as a whole.
Let's dive in.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know, maybe that can be a transition for us now. Cue up some cool music. Or maybe we're not that production heavy of a podcast, and I'll just leave it alone. And you can just...
I'll make noise.
You can just enjoy the sounds of our HVAC system in the background.
Well, Lee, what song stood out to you? Where, how did Adele touch your heart?
So the album opener, Rolling in the Deep.
Yes.
Like, so real quick, these three songs that open this album, right? Rolling in the Deep, and then you have Rumor Has It, and then you have Turning Tables.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you follow, so I'm a big fan of the book and movie High Fidelity.
You are.
Especially the movie with John Cusack. So there's one part, right, remember, where Rob Gordon is talking about making the ultimate, like, mix.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you have to start strong, and then you have to take it up a notch, and then you have to cool it off.
Yep.
And, like, that's totally the first three songs on this album. Like, you have Rolling in the Deep, which comes in strong, and then you have Rumor Has It that takes it up a notch,
mm-hmm.
and then you really cool things off with Turning Tables.
Yeah, I mean, it is a strong opener to an album, because I feel like sometimes an album starts and it has this great song, and then the rest of the great songs are at the end, so you just kind of skip the middle. But with Adele, it's like, no, this is good, and this is good, and this is good. Like, why would I skip anything?
Right, like, they're really peppered in there throughout. I think part of that is because, like, it's so raw.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some notes about Rolling in the Deep.
Ooh, let's hear it.
So within a day of her breakup, she contacted producer Paul Epworth, intent on capturing her emotion in a song. This is from Adele. Quote, we had a fuming argument the night before. I'd been bubbling. That might mean, like, I don't know what that means in English slang. That might be like blubbering, like how we say it, like you're crying. Maybe she just means really angry.
I mean, continue the quote, because that might give us some context clues.
Yeah. So she says, I'd been bubbling. Then I went into the studio and screamed.
I wonder, as a lady feeling that emotion, like, sometimes you're so mad that it's just, like, growing and growing, and it's like water that's kind of bubbling, and then all of a sudden it's, like, rolling, and you're screaming, and you're fuming, and, like, it's just a stage of anger before anger really gets explodey.
Oh, I've seen that.
You have.
So although she initially planned on completing a ballad that she had begun writing with Epworth more than a year ago, the producer suggested that she aim for a more aggressive sound. Together, they restructured the ballady song and rewrote the lyrics to reflect Adele's recent experience. And then decided on the title Rolling in the Deep.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool that, like, they took this ballad she had been writing for, like, a year and then completely reworked it.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, like, to go in the studio a day after you have this breakup, and it sounds like no one was urging her to do that. Like, she did that of her own free will.
Yeah.
Like, how cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just kind of comes back to how music is this expressive outlet for people. You know, I remember when I was younger and I was feeling big emotions, like, I would go home and I would put in a CD and just, like, turn it up really loud and just want to listen to music, because that was expressing the feelings, because I didn't have the words for those feelings yet. And so it's, I don't know, I just really admire people that are so connected with their feelings that it's like, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I have to say about it, and there is no question. Like, they're just really in touch with that part of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool that someone can be that in touch, and it's got to be, like, to some extent, like, some good therapy.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, this is how I'm feeling, I'm going to write it down, and we're going to record it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if when Adele goes on tour and then has to sing this song, like, I'm sure in some ways that's therapeutic too, because you're continuing to work through the grief cycle. But I wonder if after you get to the acceptance stage of grieving, if you're like, gosh, I just don't have it in me to give this song the justice it deserves. Or if she can just, like, really connect to that feeling every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder. Because I've seen, you know, some live performances of hers on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And most are from around this time when the album came out. And it's very powerful and very visceral. And a couple that, you know, you come across are from more recent times.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still very powerful. And yeah, like, I wonder if that's very emotionally taxing to do it now. And if it does just, like, stir up some old feelings, or if, you know, she's just gotten in a place of acceptance and she's just such a good artist that she can just channel that into her voice.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know, but very cool. So after Rolling in the Deep, Rumor Has It was my other song. Yes. So good. Yeah, I just love it. I love how it's sung. I love that she also does like the backing vocals for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very cool technique.
Yeah, it's great. Man, that last line when she's like, but rumor has it he's the one I'm leaving you for. I'm like, oh, girl, get it.
I know. Yeah, that's so good. And yeah, just what she's able to do with her voice like mm-hmm. throughout this whole album is amazing. And it just really spans like a lot of different styles and a lot of different emotions. And it's so cool.
Yeah, I feel like you really do get to see that range in this song. And like you really have some of those deep bluesy notes in it. And I just love how the story of the song goes, how it starts out with like, oh, like you think that you're going to be in love with this person and like, isn't that cute? And you're going to come back. And then like, I'm going to get my vengeance. It's mm-hmm. just like, it's such an interesting powerhouse lady kind of song. And I don't want to say like, oh yeah, cheating's fine. It's not fine. It's never fine. You should definitely have just dumped him and moved on. But like, if this is how you're going to go about it, like you're clearly taking on your power and that's pretty great for you.
Oh, yeah. And like, I think everyone who's ever been in a relationship and been dumped has, you know, been down that thought path
mm-hmm.
of like, oh, this won't last and they'll come crawling back to me. And like, then I'll get to put them in their place, you know?
Yeah. When you're just like that rageful kind of broken up with.
Yes.
Yeah. Been there.
Yeah. So I think that's why it was such a part of why it was such a popular song. Is it connects with so many people on so many different levels. Like mm-hmm. everyone's been there. Everybody's had that thought. And it's, yeah, it's really good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then it's so interesting to go from this song where she's like a powerhouse lady to Turning Tables, where it's like, you keep turning the tables on me and you aren't stable. And like, I gotta go.
Right. Yeah. So I have some info on Turning Tables too, because it was a pretty cool song. So for Turning Tables, Adele approached American musician and One Republic frontman Ryan Tedder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about One Republic, but I remember hearing of them at a time.
They were a big deal.
Yeah. Tedder had expressed interest in collaborating with the singer, with Adele, after they met in 2009. He reportedly arrived 4 hours early to their first studio session to better familiarize himself with Adele and some of her previous work. He was unaware of what was going on in Adele's personal life at that moment.
Oh.
Yeah, and he had composed the opening piano sequence and the first few lines of what would become Turning Tables,
mm-hmm.
Kind of coincidentally. It perfectly captured the experience of Adele, who arrived to the studio moments after another altercation with this former lover.
Gross.
Yeah. She was angry. She was unfocused. She denounced her ex-lover's tendency to, quote, turn the tables on her during their arguments.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Tedder heard her say that and was like, ooh, we got to work this reference into the song lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Adele recorded the demo with Jim Abyss the following day. And then Adele and Tedder arranged another session 2 weeks later. In a studio, I think in LA, and wrote and recorded, Rumor Has It.
Wow.
And the main vocals for, Rumor Has It took Adele 10 minutes to capture.
Girl's got it.
Yeah. So again, just speaking to her like prowess as a singer,
mm-hmm.
And also just being in that headspace. So that's kind of cool. Like I didn't know the story behind Turning Tables, and it's a really good song, and I didn't know that she collaborated on it, and that it just kind of worked out so serendipitously with Tedder that he had all this kind of done, and then she came in, and yeah, kind of cool. I would love to hear the demo. Maybe someday that'll be released, but
mm-hmm.
I think it'd be cool to hear her in that moment feeling all those feelings.
Yeah, I think of all of the songs, Turning Tables is one of the ones that really I forget about, and then it plays and I'm like, oh gosh, I feel that, because it's just like, it's one of those real things that I think that's one of the first red flags of like, oh, a breakup is coming, is this turning table situation where it's like, you're having this argument and then all of a sudden something gets flipped on you and you're having a different argument. And then all of a sudden you're having like three or five different arguments and you're like, we were just talking about whether you were going to do the dishes or not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like the line where she's like, I won't let you close enough to hurt me. Like, as you continue to turn these tables, I think it really does make you think about those kind of arguments that you have in your relationships. And like, are we having this argument because we want to be better, we want to be stronger, we want to fix something? Or am I having this argument because I want to hurt you?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing that, or if your partner's doing something to hurt you, like, there's something really wrong in that moment. And I just, like, I feel for Adele, I feel for the people who are in that situation in their relationships, because like that's not what it's about.
Right. Yeah, like as soon as that argument becomes destructive instead of constructive, like, I mean, you for sure just need to like leave that room.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, then you really need to take a serious look at things.
Yeah. I mean, you're a huge proponent of like, it's okay to go to bed angry.
Oh yeah, totally. I was, you know, every time we go to a wedding of a friend or something and they're like, have some advice for the bride or groom, you know, there's always that stereotypical old couple that's like, never go to bed angry.
You're like, listen, grandma.
I'm like, that advice is bullshit.
And there's an X rating on this one.
That is not an X rating. That is like a parental advisory. Not an X rating. You will get us demonetized if you say that.
Oh, geez. Sorry.
Technically, we'd have to be monetized first. So I guess say whatever you want. But yeah, like, I'm a big proponent of that it's okay to go to bed angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but to just, like, pause in the moment, I think that's huge, because it's like, if you're having the argument to hurt somebody, like, you need to walk away until you're calm enough to just say what you need to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's one of the really interesting progressions through all of Adele's albums, is seeing like a super young heartbreak as opposed to a more experienced heartbreak. And, you know, it's like when you're young, you're like, oh, I just need to fight. And then like, we're going to make this through and it's going to be fine. And it's like, or maybe you just need to be mature enough to be like, time out. This isn't right.
Yeah, like you see that progression from 19 to 21, you know, 19 is the like, we're going to fight for this, we're going to do whatever it takes. And then 21, and especially then 25, kind of takes that tone of like, hey, we're just not right for each other. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 21 is that interesting middle ground between those kind of two albums.
Mm-hmm.
Where you get these songs that are like, I'm gonna fight, and then these songs are like, I don't need you.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get to it, but I'll Be Waiting is like the one super upbeat song. And you know, when I listened to this album years ago, I was like, that's the one song that's like real weird,
because
mm-hmm. every other song is like, I don't need you, get out of my life. And mm-hmm. then I'll Be Waiting is like, I'm here when you need me or something.
But I mean, isn't that just the roller coaster of a young person in love?
Oh, totally.
And it's not like a little baby roller coaster. Like, there's huge rage moments and huge sad moments and like everything in between. That sine graph is off the charts.
Oh, I know. Huge peaks, huge valleys, huge flat distances in the middle. You know, it's all over.
Yeah. And I think that's really why I love that album, because it's like, oh my gosh, like, all of the feelings that I don't have words for, like, it's right here.
Just resonates.
Mm-hmm.
I getcha.
What other songs stood out to you?
Boy, so after Turning Tables, I have this note. So a bunch of different producers worked on this album with Adele, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the main producer, though, is a guy named Rick Rubin.
Mm-hmm.
He is, I mentioned him earlier, he is the co-president of Columbia Records. And he's a pretty well-known producer. Like, he worked with Johnny Cash on his cover of Hurt. That is amazing. And so he's just done a lot of these really good like songs or albums, and he's really unique. So he takes over the remainder of production on this album. He's notorious for his unorthodox production style. And he's pushed Adele a bit beyond her comfort zone. And Adele says, you know, despite being drawn to his unconventional methods, she said working with him was quite daunting.
Mm-hmm.
So Rubin had attended many of her shows, her live shows throughout 2008 and 2009. And after her show at the Hollywood Bowl, approached her to compliment her on her live sound.
Mm-hmm.
Then while they're in Malibu recording this album, he attempted to capture her live shows across this record and bring that sound. So he also decided against using music samples and electronic instrumentation. So he brought in a full live band, which, you know, costs a lot of money, takes a lot of time. Like, it's much easier if you have this pre-recorded electronically and you can plug it in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you lose a lot of the heart of an album when it's done electronically. Like, mm-hmm. I get time, I get money, but, you know, I think that's why I like so many of those albums from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff is done live. It's all real musicians. I think you get a lot more heart that way. Like, I think a studio guitarist can take a note and really bend it to fit a song or, you know, just feel where it's going and take it that way. And a computer can't really do that.
So I guess I'm confused. He produced half the album?
Mm-hmm. He did at least half, if not more.
Is that super common that you have multiple producers of something?
Nowadays, yeah.
Okay.
Back in like the 60s, no. Like, it was pretty much one producer. But I mean, even with like Let It Be, our last album,
mm-hmm.
You know, they had one producer, Brian Epstein. I always forget his first name. George Martin was their producer. Brian Epstein was their manager for a long time. So George Martin produced, and then they went to Phil Spector. And that was kind of, you didn't see that a lot back then. Nowadays, you can bring in a producer for one song and then work with a completely different producer for four songs and then self-produce your own song.
I guess I'm just having my mind blown right now. It seems like you would have one person for one job and that's how it would work.
I mean, you would think that, but like all these producers are known for different things. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to get a specific like sound,
mm-hmm.
like it would be better to go to that person with that ear.
Gotcha.
Than to go to somebody, you know, if you're trying to do like a like Frank Sinatra style big band and all that. Like, I don't know that I'd go to a small independent record producer
mm-hmm.
for something that orchestral and big.
Gotcha.
And vice versa.
Okay, so this person approaches Adele, pushes her outside of her comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Wants to capture her live sound across this record. And then he was a big advocate, I guess, of a more free-form approach to music making. So just kind of letting Adele and these studio musicians, like, get to know each other and then just kind of, like, jam and feel stuff out and be like, oh, this would go good here. Like, let's record that section. Rubin relied on the moods and feelings behind the music itself to guide the instrumental and melodic arrangements of the songs. And he isolated the singer in the studio and encouraged her, as well as the team of musicians, to approach the production process with more spontaneity and less restraint.
That's cool.
Yeah. And you, like, by, I think, isolating her in there, he's trying to, like, get her in the right moment when she's really feeling something to mm-hmm. then go like sing it and perform it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, arguably that's the sound that he heard in those 2008, 2009 live performances, because she's really feeling this day to day. So by wanting to take that and put it all across this album, I think that's a good way to do it. I think some people might look at that and be like, he isolated her in there? Like, how cruel. But again, I think Rick Rubin is a guy with a vision, and he knows what it's going to take to get that. And it doesn't seem like he pushed her, like, way beyond her comfort zone, you know, into her panic zone or something. Like, it seems like he kept her outside of her comfort zone, but inside of that panic zone.
So she would be in what we call the stretch zone, where you have prime learning potential and capacity.
Mm-hmm. In that flow zone.
Yes. Experiential learning applied. Go Adele.
That applies to everything. So that's Rick Rubin and his influence on this album. It's very prevalent. So after turning tables, I have Set Fire to the Rain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, just the title alone is a super cool, like, imagery-inducing title.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the chorus of Set Fire to the Rain, Watch It Burn.
Yep.
Like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, she was having some feelings.
She was. But I love that song. And again, that's a, like, middle of the album song.
Mm-hmm.
So it speaks to, I think, where she is as a songwriter, where she, like, what she was feeling at this time, and just this album's, like, amazing power. Because, you know, like you say, there's usually some good songs at the beginning and then some at the end, and the middle's kind of like meh. But this is just like song after song after song after song.
Mm-hmm.
That's just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I had that one, and then after that, what did I write here? Oh, He Won't Go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So to me, like, listening to that song, like, so it sounds like you, there would be, again, like a Frank Sinatra or a Dean Martin concert, like, down the way. And instead of going to that, like, giant sold out arena or, you know, bowl show or whatever, like, you go to the jazz club or the blues club,
mm-hmm.
in this much more intimate setting, and you get that song. And you're just blown away by it, and you're like, Frank who?
Yeah, and I mean, even the lines in it, like, it's such a good story as it goes. Like, she just, like, I won't go, like, I can't do it on my own. If this ain't love, then what is? I'm willing to take the risk. And it's just, like, oh, it just pulls me in. I'm like, oh, girl, like, take the risk. Like, love is a risk.
Oh, yeah.
Make good choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love on the chorus, she says, you know, I won't go.
Mm-hmm.
And she hits each word, like, on a beat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's super good. I mean, it's really cool musically, and then it, like, hits the point home so much more.
Oh, yeah.
And so I found it interesting, too, that, like, that's the chorus is I won't go, but then the song title is He Won't Go.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that kind of duality from it.
Well, and it's really interesting because, like, in it she's talking about, like, will he still remember me? Will he still love me when he's free? Or will he go back to the place where, like, he would choose the poison over me? And so I wonder if in this song she's talking about someone with some type of addiction, and it's like, I won't go, I won't give up on you, but, like, will he leave, like, when he's a different person? And I mean, love is really risky in that way. Like, I know how I'm feeling, but how are you feeling?
Right. Yeah. Open channels of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Always good. So yeah, there's kind of, you know, since you say that, it made me think, like, oh, that's a very, like, codependent way to look at the song. And that, now thinking about the lyrics and the chorus and the name, like, totally could be what that song's about.
Yeah, and I don't know, that interesting part of, like, won't go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's holding on? When are they holding on? Why are they holding on? Is it for the right reasons? Like, do we make each other stronger? There's just so much that I want to ask Adele about it.
Right. And again, I think that speaks to her songwriting prowess. Like, there's so many questions inspired by this song that you want to sit down and ask her.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she's probably been asked this a million times.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, ugh, she's so good.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm trying to get across.
Gonna fanboy for a moment.
Adele. Yeah, before I go into my next song, I mean, she sounds like a really just genuinely nice person.
Oh, I know.
Like, all the what is it, Carpool Karaoke with James Corden.
Yes.
Like, she tells this whole story about where she's waiting for a friend at this restaurant and, you know, has a few too many.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some family from Tennessee at this table, and they're like, Adele, like, we love you. And she's like, oh my gosh, like, go on. And so they talk about how they couldn't make it to one of her shows that she was doing in Nashville or Memphis or wherever. And so she says the next morning, like, she wakes up and she checks her jacket, and there's this little piece of paper in there. And it's this family's, like, address. And she had told them, like, next time I come through, like, I'm going to send you tickets to my show so you can go.
Whoa.
And so, I mean, she just seems like this really nice, genuine person.
She also seems hilarious. Was it Stephen Colbert that she was doing a sing-off competition against? Or maybe it was James Corden still. But she does one, she does the Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas, and they, like, set up this giant fan, and they're, like, throwing glitter and, like, stuffed animals and all kinds of stuff to be blown at her. Oh my gosh, it is, like, top marks for hilarity.
Yeah, that may have even been Jimmy Fallon. I feel like that's something he would do.
It does sound like Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, and she's also done Saturday Night Live a mm-hmm. couple times. And, like, did one fairly recently, you know, at the time of this recording, where she did this whole thing where she's on The Bachelor.
Yes.
And it's, like, every time The Bachelor, you know, kind of, like, he'll kind of cue that, like, you're not getting a rose, and she'll start singing Someone Like You. And then they really quickly dial it back with, like, no, we're not at that point yet. Like, I'm just asking you to, like, scoot over on the couch. And she's like, oh, okay then.
Things are fine.
So, yeah, like, she doesn't take herself too seriously, and I don't know. She just, she's a very rare combination, I think, in music.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, anyway, fanboy over. So, the next song that jumps out to me is, again, I'll Be Waiting.
Mm-hmm.
It's very upbeat. At first glance, you're kind of like, was this pulled from, like, another album or something unfinished? Like, why is it in this? Because mm-hmm. it's all these songs that are like, I'm strong, I don't need you. And then this one's like, I'm going to wait for you. And at first glance, you're kind of like, what? That doesn't fit. But then after listening to the whole album through, you know, a time or two, you're like, oh, no, that totally fits. That's totally something that you would say in a breakup. Mm-hmm. And, like, I have said in a breakup.
What? Like, what do you think leads to that line? Because I know that I've used it in breakups before, too.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the human brain has a tremendous capacity to block out trauma. And I think you forget all the bad times that had happened that, you know, ultimately led to this breakup.
Because
mm-hmm. if everything was sunshine and rainbows, like, why would you break up?
Yeah.
So I think the brain just kind of blocks that out and you start remembering the good times. And yeah, it's very like 500 Days of Summer, you know, where Tom remembers all the good stuff, with Summer, and his sister has to tell him, like, maybe remember a little harder the next time you're thinking. And then he does, and it's like, oh, there were some huge signs here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And also, Tom is totally the bad guy in that movie.
Public service announcement from Lee.
Yeah. Like Joseph Gordon-Levitt does a bunch of interviews where he's like, no, Tom is the villain, like, you're watching this wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely changes the whole look of that movie.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that's kind of how you get to that point. So it's a cool song. It's really upbeat. Again, one of her live performances that I was watching, she says something right before this song, and she's like, this is my only fast song of the night, so if you like to dance, now's your time.
This is your moment. Don't waste it.
Yeah, I just love that. She's like, you've got 4 minutes. Don't waste it.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that song. After that, Love Song.
Mm.
And that's her cover of this album. That's from The Cure originally.
Mm-hmm.
Her version's really good. It's a lot more slowed down than The Cure's version.
Yeah, it is.
And I really like The Cure's version. But this song and then the Watson Twins do a cover of Just Like Heaven, also mm-hmm. from The Cure. And those two songs are totally on my, like, top covers playlist.
Wow, that's big praise.
It is, yeah, because The Cure were wonderful. But yeah, I love that she takes and does one cover song per album. And she talks about doing this song and saying that it's one of her and her mom's favorite songs.
Oh.
So it's really cute that it ended up on this album and has that story. And it fits the album really well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in her slowed down, more piano driven style.
Yeah.
Like it really fits.
Yeah. It definitely has this feeling of like more true love to it. You know, that line of whenever I'm alone with you, you make me feel like I'm young again. Like it. It feels like the circle's coming round in the heartbreak from, like, this person's awful, like, I'm going to get my power back, I'm really sad, to, like, there might be other love, there might be other wholeness, like, there could be a different feeling that I experience with love.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And then after Love Song, I had, of course, Someone Like You.
This song.
The album closer and, like, what a way to close an album. Like, man, never mind, I'll find someone like you. Like, and then it goes into, like, I want nothing but the best for you. Like, it's really, when you look at the bookends of this album, right, it starts with Rumor Has It and it ends with Someone Like You.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I don't know if she intended that or if, again, that was a production, a Rick Rubin thing where he said, this is the open, this is the close.
Mm-hmm.
But man, whoever's decision that was to bookend this album with those songs, just, they deserve all the praise and all the golden microphones. I don't know what you would give that person, but they deserve something like gold plated if that's what they want.
I mean, let me preference this with, I love Someone Like You, like with my entire heart. I love it. And when the album first came out, I was like, oh my gosh, this song on repeat, like, oh, I just feel you, girl. As somebody who is removed from this heartbreak, who is in just like the most wonderful relationship that I could have ever dreamed of.
Oh, go on.
Like, I'm now the other person in the song, right? I'm not the person looking through the window at, like, the person I used to love being happy. Like, I'm the person in the window being happy. Mm. And I'm kind of like, screw you. And I say that because, like, oh, it still enrages me. Like, zero to rage right here. When you get broken up with people and they're like, I just want to come by and see if you're happy and see if you remember me. But, like, don't worry. I really do wish the best for you. Like, no. F off. If you wish the best for me, you would freaking leave me the heck alone instead of coming back and bringing up all of this. Like, how do you feel? Do you remember? Like, hold on to these positive memories. No, it's my choice. What I do with my freaking memories, and you do not get to come back and be all like sad puppy dog eyes in the window. Like, go away.
Whoa.
Oh. Sorry, I did not expect to get that mad, but it makes me so mad. And I have just had so many relationships where guys have done that of like, I just want to know how you're doing. I'm like, no, you don't. You want to know if I still love you. And like, that's either going to make you feel really good, or you're going to be like, hey, maybe we should get together. No, we should not get freaking back together. It was a train wreck. Like, it makes me so mad. So, like, I do. I love this song. I feel all of the feels when I listen to this song, and the, like, hope that's in it of I can find somebody else that I will fall in love with, and it doesn't need to be this relationship that wasn't serving me. I love everything about that. I also see the other side, and I'm kind of like, go away, lady.
Wow. Yeah, that was a lot. That was, I'm not gonna call that a soapbox, because
I had to get it off my chest.
Yeah. And like, I don't want to get away from anything, but I just want to let our listeners at home know that, like, typically when we in post-production, like, I have to bump your vocals up a little bit because they're always a little soft. That was the one time I reached over and like turned your gain knob down a little bit. I was like, oh, Al's pegging. Al never pegs. I'm going to turn this down.
Al's feeling a feeling right now.
Al's feeling a feeling. So yeah, that's really interesting though. I mean, I've had those breakups as well where the person contacts me and is like, hey, do you want to get some coffee so we can see how we're doing? And, you know, I only ever date like very smoky voiced women. So that's why they all sound like that.
Smoky voice ladies and Al.
And Al. Not smoky voice, just lovely. So yeah, I've been there. It's interesting. I guess I had not ascribed this song to my own experience for whatever reason. I think I had just kept it as Adele and was just like, oh, you go, Adele.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that was hearing everything you just said. Like, I don't know if I was doing that as a defense mechanism for myself or what. But like, I've definitely had that. Like, hey, let's go get coffee. Like, hey, how are you? Yeah, I totally understand. It's like, you don't really care how I am. You just want to see if I'm still available.
Yeah, like it's a dumb power play. Yeah. And like my heart isn't something that you get to do a power play on. You screwed up. We broke up. Like, let me heal as opposed to coming back and making you start at square one all over again. Like, it is exhausting to be broken up with. It is exhausting to have your heart broken and be sitting there and wondering what the person's doing and what did you do wrong. Like, there's a lot of freaking energy that goes into a breakup. And to then bring me back to square one just because you're curious how things are going, like, that is double disrespectful.
Preach.
I hate bad breakups, but like double breakups are just not okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The only power plays we like in this house are in hockey.
We do like power plays. Look at you doing a hockey reference.
Mm-hmm. That's all I know about sports.
You did really good. You used the right words and the right sport all together.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Lee, any other thoughts about Adele and 21, about love, heartbreak, relationships?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there's a whole nother podcast in there about that. Yeah, I love this album, and every time I listen to it, like, I just love it more. It's mm-hmm. definitely something you have to be in the right mood for. Like, if I'm at work doing invoices, like, I'm not gonna put this album on and like crank through some invoices. Like, I'm gonna put this album on and just be like, ugh, I feel you, Adele. But it's a really good album. This will definitely stand the test of time. I think all three of Adele's albums will. Like, I think she's going to go down as this artist who's just amazing. And it's really cool that she exists kind of in our lifetime. I feel like so many other artists that I like that do these big albums, it's like, well, they did these albums 40 years before I was even a thought. And they might still be around, but it's kind of hard not to be there at the debut and live through this cool, wonderful thing and see this person's creativity like live out. So I love this album. Love can be messy.
It can be really messy.
And I don't know, all those people that used to tell me, like, when you find the right one, you'll know. I was always like, what do you know? You're stupid.
You don't know me.
Right. You don't know me. And then, like, I found the right one and I did know. And now I'm like, oh, I owe all those people so many apologies.
So, Lee, we're in February, right? It's supposed to be this month of love, or at least Hallmark cards here in the States. Like, what is the piece of advice that you would give to 21-year-old Lee about love?
Boy, that's tough. You know, I think I would tell my 21-year-old self, like, every bad experience you think you've had is leading you towards the right person. And it's making you a better partner. And, like, you're not unlovable. You just haven't been loved by the right person yet. And yeah, one of our friends gave me this advice. She may have lifted it from How I Met Your Mother. I'm not sure. But she told me one time, she said, Lee, the right girl's out there for you. And she's getting to you as fast as she can.
Hmm.
And that always really resonated with me. Like, that's always stuck with me. And again, that may have been from How I Met Your Mother, but who knows? I choose to think that it was a genuine spur of the moment thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think that would be, if anyone has stuck with us this long, I think that would be my advice on love that I would give to myself. What about you? What would you tell 21-year-old Al?
I think I would tell her that it doesn't have to be hard. You know, like all of the on again, off again, will they, won't they, like crazy in love, crazy heartbroken, like that's not what love actually is. And if it feels like work, it's probably not love. It can be a lot of other things. Like it can be infatuation, it can be puppy love, it can be all these things, but it's not worth it. And it's not this like badge of honor to wear to say, look at how hard I fought for this person. Like if you're fighting that hard, that person is not freaking worth it.
Yeah.
And like you, 21-year-old Al, are lovable and wonderful, and there is somebody that's not going to make you fight for it every single day.
Yeah. I knew that.
Well, I knew that about you too.
Then why did it take us so long to find each other again?
Because we were infatuated with all these other ninnies that we didn't need to deal with.
All these other yahoos.
Yeah, but like...
Ninny. Wow, dusting off that one.
Listen, like, I think it's like you said, though, all of the jack wagons that we had to deal with, that brought us here and made us really strong partners. Because all of the stuff that I went through and compromised or tried for those other people, like, I have a much clearer understanding of who I am now because I've gone through that. And it absolutely sucked. Like, 100% wins the suck award. But, you know, in some ways I'm like, okay, thank you. Like, thank you for this lesson. I don't need to see you in person to say thank you. I don't come back into my life with the sad eyes. But thank you for the lessons you taught me. And, like, I can move on and be a better person because of it.
Yeah. Like, thank you, and also kindly fuck off.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to say.
Yeah. It's our podcast. You can say whatever you want.
Oh, man, there are so many F-bombs that I could drop when I talk about bad breakups, man.
Oh, I heard all the times in that, in your impassioned, I'm just really trying to not say rant. In your impassioned dialogue earlier, I was like, oh, she wants to cuss there. She wants to cuss there. She wants to cuss there.
I just, oh, they make me so mad. And yet, like, I do feel gratitude for all of those chuckleheads because, like, I have to be super honest. When my friends were getting married and like, oh my gosh, 10 days till I marry my best friend. Like, I was the person that would post the vomit picture because it is nauseating. And yet, when I was finally getting ready to marry you, Lee, and I was like, oh, it's 10 days till I get to marry my best friend. Dang it, they were all right.
Yep. I knew that. I never posted those vomit pictures. I was just like, ah, oh, always a bridesmaid over here.
I know. You always believed in the love and the power of love. And Al was over here being all crusty and like, love's dumb. Who needs love?
Mm-hmm. And then your heart grew three sizes that one day.
Yeah, that's exactly how it went.
Oh, well, I love this album. I love you.
I love you too.
Is there any final thoughts from you on this?
I would just like to say to whoever's listening that, like, you are worthy of love. And if you don't have the right person yet, that person is coming as soon as they can.
Nice.
So, Lee, February, bonus episode. I'm super stoked for it.
Yeah, me too. We figured if we were going to do kind of a breakup album at the beginning of February, we should probably make our bonus song, our bonus episode, something actually related to, like, love and cherubs and Hallmark cards and all that.
So what song are we doing?
So we are doing the Bare Naked Ladies, If I Had a Million Dollars.
This song gets me on so many levels, and I love it entirely so much.
Yeah, it's a good one. I am a big fan.
So, y'all, if you want to listen along with us, If I Had a Million Dollars, coming out right around the middle of February. So that's going to be our bonus episode. And y'all, this has been Songs of Our Own. And until we get to be with you again, enjoy your own songs.